Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Very pleased to be with you this Sunday morning. Coming up in the next half hour, we've got Senior Voices and Dayton Youth Radio. We've got some election analysis, and later in the program, our very own Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. Up first, a coalition of West Dayton religious groups is calling for a federal civil rights investigation into the shutdown of Good Samaritan Hospital. Premier Health recently announced it would close the medical center later this year. WYSO's Jess Mador has more.
On Thursday, the Dayton nonprofit law firm Advocates for Basic Legal Equality filed a civil rights complaint over the decision with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The administrative complaint alleges Good Samaritan's closure would adversely affect African Americans and women. Lead attorney Ellis Jacobs says the departure of Good Samaritan would leave the West Side without nearby access to emergency, labor, and delivery health services.
So in choosing to close down Good Sam, the hospital out of their entire system that serves the African-American community, they are having a disparate negative impact on the African-American community, and that is against federal law. And that's the issue we raise in this complaint that we file.
In a statement, premier officials say they're reviewing the complaint and are unable to comment at this time. For WYSO, I'm Jess Mador.
2 years ago, investment firm E.F. Hutton relocated its headquarters to Springfield, Ohio. The company took a generous tax incentive package, promising to invest millions of dollars and create hundreds of jobs in the city. Some Springfielders say E.F. Hutton's progress on those ambitious goals has been too slow. Now, Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds reports E.F. Hutton officials are hoping a new social media investment platform will help convince them otherwise.
Long before E-Trade and Bitcoin, E.F. Hutton was the big name in investing. In the late 70s and early 80s, they had a wildly successful ad campaign. The TV spots always featured a couple people talking about their stocks in a crowded place, like the bandstand at a parade.
Well, Frank, my broker's E.F. Hutton, and E.F. Hutton says...
At the mention of E.F. Hutton, the whole parade stops, and everyone leans in, hoping to overhear some solid stock tips. Then, the famous tagline.
When E.F. Hutton talks... people listen.
But like a lot of financial firms in the Reagan era, E.F. Hutton got in trouble for some questionable practices. The company wound up being auctioned off after a market collapse, and eventually they became a faded memory for most consumers. So it was a surprise for some in the financial services industry when E.F. Hutton reinvented itself a few years ago. And not on Wall Street this time, but in downtown Springfield, Ohio.
We wanted to show our commitment to Main Street USA.
That's E.F. Hutton CEO Chris Daniels. He's taking the company in perhaps an unexpected direction. The company has the financial services you'd expect, traditional investment advising and online trading services. But they also launched a cell phone network with plans that include unlimited talk, text, and trading. And a few weeks ago, just as Facebook was dealing with that whole Cambridge Analytica mess, E.F. Hutton also launched MegaLife, a social media platform with a unique pitch. The idea is for MegaLife users to earn money for retirement by using social media. It's designed to work like Facebook or Instagram, but instead of pocketing the profits, E.F. Hutton officials say they're going to give 100% of the site's net ad revenue back to the users.
Other social networks take your time and your data and provide no monetary value whatsoever in return. What our network does is provides people with points that they accumulate as they use it, and then they can redeem those points later for cash.
But these aren't like credit card points that you can cash out at any time. Daniel says all of the net ad revenue from MegaLife goes into a trust. Users get a slice of that pie, and when they turn 68 years of age, they can cash in. Daniel says the platform could help many Americans save more, especially people who live paycheck to paycheck and aren't saving for retirement.
America actually ranks only 136th in the world for its savings rate. We've recognized that that was a tremendous issue, and we found an innovative way to accumulate assets.
And E.F. Hutton will be the investment advisor for those assets, which is how the company will make money off of MegaLife. Hutton is investing heavily in MegaLife. The company put millions into this and other projects last year, and they raised just shy of $10 million over the last few months. That's given a little boost to the Springfield economy, too. E.F. Hutton has created 50 jobs so far, and it's hiring for another 30 positions in the city right now. Everything from software developers to marketers to writers. E.F. Hutton officials say all that hiring is progress towards the company's goal of creating 400 jobs over 5 years. But not everyone in Springfield seems sure of what E.F. Hutton is up to. Across the street from the E.F. Hutton Tower is a 1950s-style diner called the Fountain on Main. They sell burgers and milkshakes, and there's always a couple people at the lunch counter. Joshua Kettleson and Hillary Paymer work at the diner, and they say E.F. Hutton has been good for the local economy.
I would say we do get a lot of their, like, people for lunch and whatnot, but I would say they did add jobs. I have a couple friends that work there, so.
And do you know what E.F. Hutton does?
Not a clue. I want to say marketing, but I could be 100% wrong.
I believe they're a financial institution that they do, money marketing, that kind of thing. Those kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. So have you guys heard of this product they're trying to launch called Mega Life?
No.
Nope.
Kettleson and Paymer are social media users. They tell me Mega Life sounds intriguing, but they're already comfortable following friends and family on other established sites.
Yes, I'm on Facebook.
So would you be tempted to move over or?
Not. I don't know. It would have to have really good benefits. And, you know, I don't know what my friends would be doing. If my friends aren't on there, it's not worth it.
It may be tough to pull Kettleson and Paymer away from their current social media habits, but the folks at E.F. Hutton are hoping Mega Life will catch on, and they're hoping more people will go back to listening when E.F. Hutton talks. For WYSO, I'm Jason Reynolds.
The Ohio primary is just days away, and several local races have a fair number of Democrats and Republicans facing off. One of those races is the 10th Congressional District, with candidates from both sides of the aisle vying for the seat. The district, currently represented by Republican Mike Turner, covers Montgomery, Greene, and parts of Fayette County. WISO's April Leslie caught up with Dr. Lee Hanna, an associate professor of political science at Wright State University, to hear how the contest is shaping up.
Let's start with the Republican side. What do you know about the candidates?
Sure. So we know that Mike Turner is, of course, the incumbent. He's been in office since 2002 representing this area, and he's running against John Mitchell and John Anderson. John Anderson has challenged him in the past. At the moment, this as an incumbent and, you know, just judging by the money raised, judging by the lack of advertising, the lack of attention, this seems like a fairly calm race where we would assume that Mike Turner is in good shape. However, I do always remind people that 6 years ago, people felt the same way about Eric Cantor, and he lost to David Bratt in a Richmond, Virginia race. So it does happen. So certainly don't want to totally count them out. John Anderson has run in the past. I believe this is John Mitchell's first candidacy. You know, sometimes you see these challengers where maybe the first cut is just to get some name recognition, to get their feet wet, and if they sense any vulnerabilities, or perhaps, you know, they sense that maybe Mike Turner is looking to move on at some point, then they're just trying to position themselves for the future.
Okay. And that said, is it unusual for Mike Turner to be facing this many challengers during the primary?
At the moment, I would say this is pretty typical. I think less about the number of candidates in the race and more about, are any of these candidates high profile? Are they leaving, you know, a major state house position to try to challenge? Like if this was Mike Turner against some state senators and some state representatives, and that would tell me that there's something in the water and some people view him as vulnerable. But the fact that both of these candidates are outsiders makes me think this will probably be a pretty typical low salience Republican primary as far as the House goes.
So let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about the Democratic side. There are also three candidates running for the
Correct.
Democratic spot here. Can you tell me a little bit about those candidates?
Sure. So first I'll mention Michael Milicic, who is running and has been probably quieter than the other two, has not raised money. His campaign has not been as well known, as visible, at least at the moment. And then Robert Kleppinger, who many people in the area will know, especially Democrats, because he has been the candidate in the past in a couple of elections. And then finally, Teresa Gasper, who is a newcomer. She's a political outsider. This is her first foray into electoral politics. And she has gotten some early attention, in particular because in the first quarter, she actually actually raised more money than Mike Turner. That doesn't mean that she has more cash on hand per se, but that is at least a pretty strong signal that there's some excitement behind her, that she's doing something right. Because when donors give to a candidate, they not only want to give to someone that they believe in or like, but they want to give money to someone that they think could actually win. You know, they want a return on their investment. So the fact that she has had such a good first quarter is a strong sign that perhaps she may be a part of this broader blue wave that, you know, that many people have talked about to come in the 2018 general.
Early voting at this point has already started. The primary is May 8th. What should voters watch out for?
So one thing that is interesting, the fact that we don't have a knockdown, drag out primary battle like we might have in, say, the Republican and Democrat gubernatorial races could be good for them in the future, just in terms of whoever wins, they're not going to have as much of they're not going to take as much baggage from a tough primary fight into the general election, which isn't the story in some of these other national races. We'll see as some of these primaries end that there's going to be a lot of a lot of talk and conflict to kind of work out within the party. Don't think we're going to see that in Ohio 10, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not that makes a difference when we get to the general.
Okay, Dr. Lee Hanna, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And we've got plenty of election news for the upcoming primary on our website, WISO.org, or you can visit your county Board of Elections website. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend on WISO. Thanks for joining us. Today on Senior Voices, we meet Cheryl Grimes, who moved to Dayton in the late 60s after graduating college. She remembers the businesses owned by her entrepreneurial family in the small town of Laurel, Mississippi, where she began working in 1950 at the tender age of 3. Cheryl spoke with Dayton Metro Library volunteer interviewer Jason Cotney Schuler.
My parents were owners of a business. My grandmother ran a daycare. So all I can remember is either in the business or in the daycare. And I think I started about 2 or 3 years old working in my mother's restaurant. I sold the penny candy, and Coca-Cola was a nickel, so I could count the money. Coca-Cola's went up to 6 cents, and then I had to learn how to subtract. And my father would say, "You only went up one penny, and you can count from 6 to 10. So I learned to do that. We had Tootsie Rolls, I think they were called Long Boys. We had Bubble Gum. We had Jawbreakers. We had Malta Meals, little, I think it was about maybe 5 or 6 little malts. And we sold Penny Cookie. You could get one little cookie for a penny. I think we had Peppermint. And it was a whole little showcase of nickel candy. And some things you could get 2 for a penny. If you got a coconut cookie, which were smaller than the other cookies, you could get 2 of those cookies for a penny. And my mother, as I said before, ran the business. And my father went from the restaurant that he and my mother had to another restaurant that was in another part of the little town. And he also had an area which is called the mini markets of today, the little curb things that you could walk to. So he had a store like that. And I grew up working in every facet of their business. I think my mother left me at 11 years old. She went to California. And she said, "You're in charge of the store." And she left me there. I think I was 11 or 12. And she had employees, and they had to, you know, deal with me. But it was an experience that, you know, I knew how to do what she had taught me over the years. How to take the money out the register, how to start the business up in the morning, how to run the ice cream machine, how to do hot dogs, chili. You know, I mean, it was everything I could cook. You know, I just learned to do all that stuff very early. And it became second nature. You know, I tell anybody I can fix a hamburger with my eyes closed. So, you know, she taught me a lot. We barbecued, we grilled. My father had an open pit right in the restaurant, ice cream. I have a sign at home that says, my father opened his business and he sold ice cream for a nickel a scoop.
That was 71-year-old Cheryl Grimes reminiscing with volunteer interviewer Jason Cotney Schuler as part of the Senior Voices Project. This interview was edited by Community Voices producer Zebedee Reichert. Senior Voices is a collaboration between the Dayton Metro Library, Rebuilding Together Dayton, and WYSO. The series is made possible through the generous support of the Delmar Healthcare Fund of the Dayton Foundation.
This year on WYSO, we're taking you to the small towns and rural communities in our listening area.
You know, you're preserving not only the habitat, not only the bird itself, but you're preserving a way of life, you know.
Stories that are fun, engaging, that go beyond the stereotypes.
This is a dream come true, be out here with a good buddy and friends and hunting like I wanted to do when I was a kid. So
I'm Renee Wild. Join me for County Lines, a year-long series on 91.3 WYSO.
My car Dave was in the shop over 40 times in 8 months. Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So one time I slammed the door, and as I do so, the back of the front seat just fell off. I had never realized how important the back of the front seat is until the following day when I was driving up a hill and began to slide into the back seat. Turn your car into the programs you love.
Learn more about donating your vehicle at WYSO.org.
Hi, this is Cindy Funk, and I hope you'll tune in to the Dear Green Place this Sunday. I'll have lots of great Celtic music for you, new, just-released music, and some with a bit of age on it that just makes it sweeter. Toes will be tapping the Dear Green Place Sunday at 1 p.m. on WYSO.
I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks for joining us. Children raised in a religious home often face challenges to their beliefs as they become teenagers. Our story today from Dayton Youth Radio charts that battle from the inside. Here's project coordinator Basim Blunt to introduce today's feature.
In the book of Romans, Apostle Paul talks about the struggle between his spiritual life and the desires of his earthly body. Today's Youth Radio story helps us remember that even Jesus and the disciples were once teenagers. Here's Demarion Spencer.
I'm Demarion Spencer. I play multiple positions in baseball, like second base and pitcher. I love music and I'm a very religious teenager. I want other teens to know that you're not lame for being religious. My story is about the struggle, the universal struggles that all Christians go through. Most kids or teens are reckless and just don't care sometimes about their behavior. Me, on the other hand, I always have this voice in my head asking me, is this pleasing in the eyes of God? I find it a constant struggle and continually beat myself up about it. It was believed that I am smarter and wiser beyond my years, that I have a calling to preach the gospel. My grandparents have footaged me as a four-year-old boy with a small podium my grandfather built for me.
You always wanted to pray. You always wanted to preach. You always was mocking me when I preached.
My grandfather, Reverend Ronald Bailey Sr., is a minister. I lived with him and my grandmother until I was five, so he was a very strong role in the development of my religious ways.
Well, it is something special about you, about your spirit that's within you. The other people see it in you that you may not see in you. You had that good spirit within you. You remind me of myself at that age.
We're not that uptight. I mean, we're not the you-can't-do-anything Christians, but I have always felt extra pressure from myself to be right all the time. I have always struggled with the ways of this world and my Christian beliefs. Things like social media, music, and sometimes sexual urges have all troubled me. I first started Instagram this summer before my freshman year. I was nervous. I thought I would never get a lot of followers, and my friends would make fun of me. I was caught off guard when a spam account with inappropriate pictures of women. I didn't want anything to do with it. But I found myself being attracted to the pictures before ultimately reporting it and blocking them. I was listening to a rap song by Migos with explicit lyrics and enjoying it then. Then it happened. Is this pleasing to God, and how do you think he would react listening to such secular music? I felt God would be ashamed, and I felt that if I didn't change that music, I would have to answer to him about it later. I paused the music and debated in my head for probably 30 minutes about what I should do. Listen to the song because I really liked it, or go to gospel music I liked, like Kirk Franklin. I ended up not listening to anything. My grandfather brought me 2 giant study Bibles that I find myself using sometimes, but I don't feel like I use them often enough.
I feel that you have a lot ahead of you, as long as you stay on the path that you're on right now and don't let nobody persuade you or fall under your peers' influence and follow your own mind and be a leader and not a follower. You should go far and be able to do whatever you need to do. And you always know that you have the Lord by your side, as long as you follow in his will.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of you, man.
I learned that everyone is flawed, and it's our mistakes and sometimes our sins that make us better in the end. I don't have to be perfect right away, and God doesn't expect me to be.
I love God. You love God? What's wrong with you?
For Dayton Youth Radio at Stuyvesant School for the Arts, this is Demarion Spencer.
That was Romans versus Migos, written and produced by Demarion Spencer from Stuyvesant School of the Arts. Special thanks to Demarion's grandfather, Reverend Bailey Sr., and his teacher, Leslie Rogers. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blanche.
Wanted you to fall. You remember I do. I do. You could have lost it all. You remember I do. I do. The world could throw you off. Oh, we got you covered. Protect us from it all. That's what makes me love him. I don't need a reason to fall on my knees and tell him how I feel in my heart. And let him know.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council.
You my God, what's wrong with you?
Love him, I love him. Love him, I love him. Love him, I love him. Love him, I love him, I love him. Love him, I love him, I love him. Love him, love him, I love him. Love him, love him, love him. Love him, I love him.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first full week of late spring. It's the third week of the swarming termite moon and the second week of the sun in Taurus, the height of the Eta Aquarid meteors. Middle spring seeds to late spring now, and under the closing canopy in the Eta Aquarid shooting stars, the wild phlox are purple in the swamp, ragwort is gold, May apples and spring cress flower, wild ginger, meadow rue, bellwort, jack-in-the-pulpit, nodding trillium, and thyme-leafed speedwell are still blossoming. The sticky catchweed replaces chickweed. Thyme and horseradish open in the herb garden. But if a person is restless and stricken with wanderlust by spring, then from this fragile space in the year, one can travel through all the layers of early, middle, and late spring. For just a few days, all of those seasons lie out totally accessible to anyone who will bother to go see them. As May begins, the lower Midwest lies between the first stirring of color in northern Minnesota and the leafing of all the trees along the Gulf of Mexico. If you travel to the Canadian border now, you will find the first cottonwoods budding there, the first crocus, the first daffodil and tulip foliage pushing out of the ground. It is still the second or third week of March in Ohio River Valley time. The city grass is green, but the plantings along the roadside are still brown. and the fields are all still dull from the cold. Gaining on spring at the rate of approximately one day for every 30 miles south, you will see the grass showing color near St. Cloud, Minnesota. And by Minneapolis, it's the 1st of April in Cincinnati time. A few tulips are in bloom, and forsythia is out, and daffodils are blooming, and maples flower, and willows glow. Into Wisconsin, down to Madison, the tree line comes alive with golds and pale greens, and dandelions appear in the lawns and fields. Scilla, bluebells, and daffodils are in full flower, and the first pink magnolias, too. Willows are starting to green up, and it's April 10th in Pittsburgh time. Into Chicago and northern Indiana, the intensity of color grows with each mile, all the winter branches filling in. Redbud and apple tree blossoms announce the middle of middle spring. Then Kentucky brings out all the full garlic mustard by Lexington, and middle May sweet rockets at the Tennessee border, moving the world quickly towards summer. It's clover time all the way now to the ocean. First the white, then pink, then the tall sweet clovers into South Carolina. The canopy closes in and loses its early brilliance by the time you pass into southern Georgia, where the redbud and apple blossoms are falling. In Mobile, Alabama, the leaves are full size. Mulleins and thistles and lilies are open. It's June. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of late spring. In the meantime, if you want to recapture the new days of early spring or the vanishing flowers of middle spring, then travel north. To find the future, go south. And to follow the months day by day, you may be interested in my daybook for May from Amazon.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Coming up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.
Juliet Frumhold. Join me on a musical journey every Sunday night on Alphorithms. We'll go far out to the edges of space, time, and genre, and make it back home before the weekend is over. Come along, Sunday nights from 8 to 11 on Alphorithms on WYSO.
I feel the liftoff. The clock has started. Roger.
This is Judd Plattenberg of Oregon Printing in Dayton, Ohio. I never cease to be amazed with the new business that comes in the door because people have heard us on WYSO. If you own a business, I think WYSO is a great place to direct your marketing dollars. To me, it's a true investment that really does yield a great return.
To learn more about how to take your business public, contact me, Karen Bledsoe, at WYSO.org.